It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here, a postmortem on Microsoft's quarterly results. We'll talk about the ongoing problems with the latest Windows update. And by the way, there's a new insider build to make things even more confusing. And Mary Jo Foley's got the best code name ever. All coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 593, recorded Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. One throat to choke. Windows Weekly is brought to you by PryLock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing emails, candy drops, and social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training from PryLock. Go to PryLock.com/TWiT and use the promo code LEO to save 30%. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you can get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the Halloween edition. It's so spooky. No, it's not. It's not at all spooky. Paul Thurrott is here, THURROTT.com. He's a wonderful fella, and he's wearing the outfit of a Red Sox fan, he tells us, internally. Woo-hoo. Internally. It's just like in his head. Mary Jo Foley is also...
brag.
Yeah.
I'm a real
humble brag. You guys looked good out there. Not that I was rooting for you, because the Dodgers are mortal enemies of the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, I see.
Going way back to the Polo Grounds.
See, I'm actually kind of ambivalent about the Dodgers, but...
Chavez Ravine. Mary Jo Foley, she has the cutest outfit ever, and I hope you're watching the video. If not, download it instantly so you can see Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com.
I mean, it looks like she assaulted a homeless person. What are we... What are we celebrating here?
She's wearing...
Guys, you can't tell what I am.
Megan did a better job of making her MacBook look like a Mac.
Come on. No, I mean, there's significance in every part of my outfit.
Okay.
I am the queen of notepad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It says that around your neck.
Here's a notepad. See, there's a little notepad.
Yeah.
And this is sticky notes, a crown of sticky notes in tribute to Notepad, and I am wearing the purple cape of OneNote, also in tribute to Notepad. Oh, Notepad's the best. These things are just kind of side players, but yeah, I'm the queen of Notepad.
You're like a character from a Tolkien novel or something.
And not one of the good ones, like the Cimarron.
Not the one you read, but the one you read.
Come on.
It took place in the Second Age.
You look great.
Look at you. What are you wearing? You're wearing an imaginary Red Sox fan outfit.
Yeah, that's really pretty pathetic, Paul.
I have a Red Sox glass.
There you go.
All right.
Go Sox.
I have a red iPhone in Red Sox.
Sox are wicked good. Oh, I like that. What is that?
That's the iPhone.
Oh, that's pretty. Okay. I have that one too. That's the product red iPhone XR. Mm-hmm. It's now gotten to the point where they're really they should put out a guide to iPhones, like those birding books, so that you know.
I own two classic Volkswagen Bugs, right? And for a period of time in my life, I could look at a bug and I could tell you exactly what year it was. It's really difficult because the changes were fairly minor.
Yeah.
You know, between years. And the iPhone is getting a little bit like that.
Can you recognize a Volkswagen 1943, the Hitler edition? Can you tell that from a distance?
Leo, the VW enthusiast community doesn't really talk about that.
We don't want to mention.
That's the Windows me of the VW.
The people's car.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to Windows Weekly. This is a show where we talk all about Microsoft Windows.
Yep. In case it wasn't obvious.
Pay no attention to the fact that Apple released a bunch of products yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Whatevs.
Whatevs. They talked about their retail store for like an hour.
You know, it's funny because I am so inured to Apple events, which I have to say at this point in time probably are unnecessary.
I've been saying that for years. Yeah. We continue.
That I didn't even notice till you mentioned something, Mary Jo, that in fact they did go on and on about the store.
It's all during that period of the show, that's all I tweeted. Every 10 minutes, I'd be like,
I know.
Still talking about retail.
I wasn't watching it, but I could see from Twitter, everyone's like, and they're still talking about the retail stores. And I came back after like a half hour and I'm like, they're still talking about the retail stores. Okay.
They're just tough. This is not a new thing. They've always been like this. Steve Jobs used to go off and he's like, 45-minute long demos where he's sitting at a computer trying to use a Mac like it's the first time he's ever touched the mouse. You know, like...
He's no Panos Panay.
It's good for me to see this through the eyes of others because, honestly, I'm so sucked into this that I don't...
And you know what? You're not the only one. Like, I mean, even not just press, but normal people just get crazy over this stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's why they still do it because
you
can get 1,000... Well... Now, that's the other thing. There weren't 1,000 press people in there. At least I hope not, given the sound of the cheers.
No.
This one was easy for the Microsoft fan because, you know, with iPad Pro, there's always the fear they're going to finally do something that competes with Surface Pro. With the Mac, of course, it does already compete. And what was the other stupid thing they announced? Mac Mini, whatever. So it just doesn't – none of it mattered. Like, it was just like, good. We can sit easy for another 7 years when they update the Air again.
Oh, man.
You know?
It really does feel like Apple is getting out of the Mac business, I have to say. It's that slow slide. It's a long slide, but it's that slow slide toward oblivion that you really start to recognize. Mm. We were saying before the show began, it was like with the Apple II. You could just really feel it.
Yeah, yeah. And I was saying at that time, you know, when you look at the MacBook Air, the second one, the previous one was... is fantastic. It is.
It was innovative, but that was 2008.
Yeah, this is the model for every Ultrabook that's ever been released.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Anyone listening to the show, anyone could look at that product and say, okay, it's 2018. What do we do to make this a modern computer? And Apple got some of that stuff right, but my God, did they just cough up a hairball at about half of it? And it's just, it's tough because if you care about the Mac, and I don't per se, but there are no good choices anymore. There are no Macs that don't have a terrible keyboard. You know, like, there is no 15-inch MacBook Pro that doesn't come with that stupid toy touch bar thing. You know, these things are all too expensive for what they are. There is no good decision to be made there. Y-series processors, terrible keyboard.
We didn't know at first because just as Intel did for Microsoft with the Surface Go, it was a chip no one ever, you know, had announced. Mm-hmm. But we know
it's
now
a chip no PC maker could love.
Yeah, we now know it's an i5, 7 watts, Y series. So,
which by the way, I think is unique. I believe the Y series was all 5 watt before this.
Yeah, this is unique. It's a new thing for Intel. Yeah. And they have added it to Arc apparently. So you can see for yourself, but. That's a little disappointing, right? I mean, who's using Y series processors? Is that in the Surface? K Pro, love that K Pro.
Well, KB Surface Toys. Go uses Pentium Gold, right?
Pentium Gold,
yeah, but that's a toy computer too. I mean,
Surface Go is really slow. It's not a happy
Surface Go. Costs half of what a MacBook Air costs,
right?
Yeah,
like there is no justification for an Ultrabook with a Y series processor. Period. I don't believe there's a precedent for this.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing.
You know, Apple's always done this thing where, and they're not alone in this, right? I know there's a term for this when there's the thing that gets you in the door, but then you upgrade and you feel good about it because you got the thing that makes more sense.
Yeah, the base model that nobody buys.
Yeah, so Apple's awesome at this.
They're masters
at
this, yeah.
Lately, with the phones, you get 64 gigs, which is unacceptable in 2018. But the next bump up isn't, you know, $50 to $128. It's $100 to $256. And so you end up spending a lot more than you mean to. They've just always been really good at this. And I think with the MacBook Air, it's kind of a bigger thing because when you kind of do the math on it, I think a lot of people, especially, you know, you're handing a kid off to 4 years in college or something, right? You're not going to buy him this computer. You got to get him a MacBook Pro. Like, you want that thing to last. Just spend a couple hundred bucks more and get him a MacBook Pro. And I think that's kind of the point. Mm. You know? It's like, okay, we gave you this thing you said you wanted, but we're going to price it $200 higher than you said you wanted it
at. At least.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. And now we have, you know, we have to do some thinking.
Apple's sub $1,000 notebook is the old MacBook Air, which and nobody in
just
their
like
right
it
mind
was on Tuesday,
yeah.
Or on Monday or whatever. Yeah,
I do. You do. You said this in your podcast you do with Brad. This is your hangover. This is the day after the hangover.
Yeah, the Apple hangover.
Apple hangover. So we don't
like Apple
talk.
Events. You know, it just lets me go on Twitter and
rant,
have a good time.
Yeah,
and then I have to deal with the three or four people who come back and say,
yeah,
you seem really angry.
You really
did Apple hurt you when you were a child? Yeah. Like, what's going on there?
Apple hurt me yesterday. At least it hurt.
Like, you just be happy for them. You know, they're saving the world.
Hey, you gotta love it. It's made out of old tin cans, right?
Yeah. Sure.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's priced accordingly. So
100% recycled aluminum.
You know, that lifestyle isn't cheap.
No, the aluminum lifestyle is not cheap. I think it might have something to do with tariffs. I'm just guessing. All right, moving right along. Apple at the event announced that, I think they said, 100 million Macs? Which I had to laugh because at the same time this week, Microsoft announced that there are 1.5 billion Windows PCs.
Yeah. Windows PCs active in active use.
That's that's a remarkable number.
So I didn't have a chance to speak to Mary Jo about this. I wrote up something about the kind of good and bad of this number, but
it's the same number, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But I think that's good that it's the same number because I was kind of under the impression it was declining.
Right. Me too. I agree. Yeah. That's my.
So I felt kind of relieved when I saw the one. I'm like, oh, they still have 1.5 billion Windows PCs out there. That's surprising to me.
Yeah. The PC market over the past 7 years has declined to the point where it's about 2/3 the size it was at its peak.
Right.
From a annual sales perspective. Meaning they used to sell 300 million plus. Now they sell 200 million plus. Mm-hmm. A lot of those PCs are obviously replacement PCs, you know, several year old PCs. But obviously there's also a part of the market that's not upgrading and a part of the market that's going to other platforms, you know, iPad maybe or Chromebook or whatever it is. Right. And so given this climate, given Microsoft's really slow pace with Windows 10, the new version of Windows, the newest version, right? The one that goes out on new PCs. I had a fear that this number, the reason they weren't talking about it, because they literally have not publicly stated
said anything in a while.
In over 3 years. It's been 3 years.
Oh, wow. 3 years. Jeez.
Yep. I also assumed that this number must be declining. And it's not. And yeah, like you, I agree. I think it's ultimately that's good news.
But does it imply that so 1.5 billion people using Windows Vista? I mean,
no.
So it's so the number is 1.5 billion Windows powered PCs, right? So they're not saying we have 1.5 billion people using Windows PCs. Like some people may have multiple PCs, right? So we're not saying that's number of users, but this is running any version of Windows. Yep. This is Windows 10, 7, 8, Vista.
Not embedded.
Probably XP.
Well, but we know that 700 million of them are running Windows 10. So
that's right.
800 million of them are running Windows 7 mostly.
Something else. This does not. Yeah, Leo asked a good question. Is this embedded too? Like, is this
Windows PCs.
10 IoT? Just PCs.
They didn't say devices. They literally said PCs.
You're right. No, you're right. Yeah.
So I find that to be very relevant and important to this conversation because in the Windows 10 number, actually the Windows 10 number is probably closer to 600 and something because some tens of millions of those are Xboxes. Some unknown number are embedded devices or IoT devices or some small number of Surface hubs. And I'm sure there's even some phones in there still, right?
HoloLens even counts, even though they're
HoloLens, I bet it's, you know, it's probably close to 650 or something, but some somewhere in the 600s are PCs, right? Most of those are PCs.
Yeah.
But there are two things you have to kind of really think about with this number now that we have it again. One is how this compares to other modern platforms like iOS and Android. and two, what the makeup of that audience is. And I think this speaks to the state of the PC industry. And that's the thing I think of is engagement. You know, people who have Android devices or iPhones are highly engaged. They're actively looking for new apps oftentimes, or new content, whatever it is on their little mobile stores and things on their phones. Windows PC users kind of just use Word and Excel and Photoshop and whatever set of tools they may use. And they're not necessarily, they're absolutely not looking for new things. I mean, by and large. And you can just see that in the uptick in the, you know, the Microsoft store or whatever. There's no vibrant market for new stuff on Windows. You know, it's just not a, it's not the new up and coming thing. You know, it's just the way it is. But I couldn't find completely up to date numbers, but Google, I think it was, I'm just off the top of my head, I'm sorry. I think it was last year, but it, at some point Google said that there were 2 billion active Android devices in the world. Apple made 2 announcements this year with regards to the size of iOS. In September, they said they were getting close to having sold 1 billion iOS devices. And then the size of the audience back in January or February was somewhere around, I apologize if this isn't completely accurate, but it was 7 or 750 million, I think. As far, and that was usage, like actual users or actual active devices.
Active devices,
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Windows is sort of in the middle from a raw numbers perspective. But as far as, you know, being able to monetize the platform, right, beyond just the sale of a device, I think Apple's actually well ahead of all of them, even though they're in last place. And Android obviously has a lot more engagement than Windows does as well. That's why we have ads in Windows 10. That's why we can't have anything nice.
And pop-up surveys and other sundry things.
Would you recommend this to your friend? No, but seriously, would you recommend it? We'll give you a form. Would you send the form if we gave you a form? We'll fill it out. We'll just put your name at the end.
Yeah, and then there's this other related statistic to this, which we heard this at Ignite, but we heard it again in Microsoft's earnings forecast this week, which was now more than half of Windows devices in the enterprise are on Windows 10. So here's another thing to try to figure out how this fits into the picture, right? So we know there's more than 700 million active Windows 10 devices. Mm-hmm. We know that there are 200 million commercial Windows 10 devices, but commercial Windows 10 devices includes small and mid-sized business, not just enterprise.
Yep.
So now we have this number, which is half of the people in the enterprise who are running Windows, some version of Windows, are now running Windows 10. So we don't know what that number is.
Yep.
We can't even figure out what that number is.
That's the point.
Yep. Pieces that we know.
It's, but I we can agree it's a big number, right? It's
it is 100 a big number.
Million something number, you know?
Yeah. So then my question is this good or is this a moment when we should be concerned? Because Windows 7 end of free support is January 14th, 2020. So if half of enterprises are now on Windows 10, that means half aren't. And, you know, for them, the migration period to get off of Windows 10 with a large number of users where they have to do pilots and test all their
18
apps.
18 months, I think.
Yeah, 18 months. Yeah. So they can do it still. But is this good or bad?
I don't think it was coincidental that Microsoft recently announced that those commercial customers still on Windows 7 as of January 2020 will be able to pay extra for support going forward. And that payment will go up as time goes by.
Right.
Right. Now, I think there are two reasons to announce that now. One is hopefully to incite some of those customers to upgrade before then, so because that cost may be exorbitant for them and they don't want to pay it. But also I think to kind of get something into our heads, people like you and I who are analyzing what the company does, right? Wall Street or whatever, in saying, hey, you know, when January 2020 comes and there are still 30% or whatever the number is of the user base on Windows 7, this isn't a defeat. We're still making money on these guys, right?
Yeah.
And that's actually the most important thing about that audience, because when I say that there's a big lack of engagement in the Windows user base as compared to iOS and Android, I feel like this is a fact, but regardless of your opinion of that, the commercial component of the Windows user base or the enterprise part of it, whatever you want to say, for all intents and purposes, is engaged in the right way for Microsoft, because they are literally paying them every single month for the right to use this product. Mm-hmm. It's the best kind of arrangement you can have with a customer possible, right?
Yeah.
So that market is for Microsoft, as I would say, as dynamic and important as, you know, iOS is to Apple, as Android is to Google or to Samsung or to whomever, in the sense that those are their engaged users, right? I don't mean it's as lucrative financially necessarily, but although maybe it is, I don't know. But that's the audience that really matters.
Right.
Sounds like Leo.
Geez. So, I guess my question is, if they've got one.
I now got to stop taking drugs before we record this podcast.
It's me, Pikachu. Hi, Paul.
That's amazing.
Hi, Mary Jo.
I never would have known it was you.
I couldn't let Mary Jo suffer in silence all alone.
No, you have to don your costume though. As well.
No hands. I can't.
Hard to type with that.
I can't function this way. Plus, I can't hear you because I don't have any headphones in this. They don't fit.
I bet it's hot in there.
What am I hitting? Okay, we're going to go back to Windows Weekly.
I can't feel my feet.
Is he okay? Did he pass out? We'll just see his feet up in the air like...
I forgot that the headphones
wouldn't
fit.
Go in there.
Yeah.
We were like, where is he? Did he pass out?
I was inside it.
I heard a balloon deflating sound.
Yeah. Well, that's because I have a fan in my pocket.
So have to. It'd be so hot in there.
It also keeps it inflated. All right, moving right along.
It is Halloween, right?
It's like the fan in the new MacBook.
It is, yes. Not much louder. It is the last day of October.
Yep.
So I'm really excited that the October update will be rolling out any minute now.
How much time we get left here? It looks like on the East Coast, we're looking at, 9 hours left in the day? It could happen. It's a Tuesday. Oh, no, it's actually Tuesday. It was yesterday. God damn it.
It's a Wednesday.
This stupid company. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's I kind of didn't think they were going to make it.
That's just our notion of time.
You gotta do like a record scratch sound and go back to what we were saying in August. Because I assure you, at the time, the talk was about how this time they're going to deliver it early.
We did say that.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I thought they were until showstoppers.
Mary Jo was telling me in early August to calm down. It's not happening. And I'm like, I think it's done.
Yeah, you're like, they're rolling it out early. It's going to be in August. I'm like, I don't think it's going to be in August, but it seems earlier than the last
version. It's not going to be in October either.
It probably is not.
Oh. Well, it could be.
It could.
That's unlikely.
So tell me where we stand right now. The insiders got.
Okay. Actually, just as of today. Do I have this story still? Yes. Actually, as of yesterday, Microsoft released Windows 10 build 17763.107 to insiders. This is the fix for the original release that went out and had to be pulled back, right? They had previously released. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This fixes the zip extraction thing this is a different fix now. This is a second fix.
Never mind.
That seems like an easy thing to fix.
We actually haven't heard on the build, the main build, in 10 days, 2 weeks, I made 2 weeks ish.
Yeah. They pulled it October 6th. And then.
But they released a fast ring thing.
They did. They released to the fast ring, and then slow and release preview ring, I think, also got an updated version
of
Windows 10 1809. But it has never gone back out to mainstream. Right.
Right. That's right.
So Lawn Dog in the chat room is raising an interesting point.
Yes.
He says they can hold on to it. I can't think of anybody that's actually champing at the bit to get the new version of Windows 10.
Okay, but I think we're missing the point here, though. This is software that was finalized in August. It was ready to be released in September.
Yeah, but it was prematurely finalized.
It was released in the beginning of, sure. But the problem is they're on a six-month cadence, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
When you delay software like this, we're not impacting. If this thing was happening 3 years from now or a year from now, who would care?
Right.
The next one's coming out in 6 months, guys. Actually, no, it's not. It's coming out in 5 months.
Because they're already working on it.
Right. Yeah,
they
we're a separate team. Is that right?
We're making the delta between these releases much smaller now. That's the problem. It's not that anyone wants it or that, you know, it has some necessary functionality. The problem is we have too many of these releases, right?
So they should go back to once
now,
year, right?
Now they're not going to be spaced out enough.
Yeah.
Well, the other question I have is, you know, the clock starts ticking when they say, okay, it's available to consumers now in terms of mm-hmm. support. And that's how they clock the support, how long they're going to support it, 18 months after that, or 30 months if you have certain versions, right? So the clock started October 2nd, and then they pulled it October 6th. So you haven't been able to get it since October 6th. So are they going to reset the support clock also? We don't know. Because on the lifecycle page, it still says October 2nd is the start.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the team that's doing 2019... or whatever it is, Q.
19H1.
Yep. 19H1.
I'm surprised you can't remember that, Leo. It's,
that team is a separate team. These are like parallel tracks, right? Or no?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I would say yes.
So they've been
yes.
working on this for a while.
Right. Yeah.
But it seems like they work on it without knowing that they've got a stable base to work on?
Right. Oh, Leo, this team has released 3 or 4 new builds of the next version of Windows 10 in the interim.
Yeah. Right.
Which I have to say is borderline unprofessional and...
it's not working. This is not working.
If only someone had warned us about this 2 years ago. Yes, it's not working. You're right.
It's not a good, tenable system.
Don't they sweep up everything that they fix and put it into 19H1? Isn't that how
It will be brought in.
Right.
I'm sure they have a very complex system for making this work or making it not work, whatever they're doing. But yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's gotten so convoluted and hard to keep track of right now for us because there's so many different builds and build numbers and... Like this one that went out yesterday, the cumulative update. I'm like, okay, when I saw that go out yesterday, I'm like, there's no way now that they're going to re-release 1809 to the mainstream if they just put this fix into this update for insiders. I was like, they can't do it today, right? It's not possible.
Why not? They already have multiple tracks. You know, they could release publicly today and then release this cum to them next Tuesday or whatever. I'm not saying they're going to, but...
No.
It's already so crazy. I
know. Well, and Patch Tuesday isn't next Tuesday. It's 2 weeks. It's in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's when you would think they would have, you know, the refresh with all the cumulative update bits to people who already have. Some people already have 1809 who got it before they pulled it. So that they're going to get another cumulative update on Patch Tuesday, which is, I guess, the 12th or whatever.
That will fix the problem and then fix the new problem.
Right, I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think it's so much like anyone's clamoring for anything in this update, but I think people are starting to say like, what's going on, right? Like I've had people say to me like, why can't they re-release it?
Why can't this company successfully update its own software? That's a reasonable question.
But
you
they
know,
do update. They do security updates, which are the updates that matter.
I mean,
But that's the point. I think the average user's getting updates once a month at least. If not more, and the average user says my Windows is getting updated. They're not dying. Nobody
has
said.
That's not the point.
Well,
but that's not the point. You're missing they market these releases as important things. They want people to get excited, buy new computers, upgrade, whatever. They can't successfully do that.
Right.
You know, this is the second time in a row they've had a major failure on this thing.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying that it's not maybe that bad because. I don't hear consumers saying, well, I just have to have that.
Right.
I can't even remember what that is.
I listen. Right. If they just pretended this never happened and skipped it, everyone would probably celebrate it.
Yes. Right. Just do the security patches.
No, but again, I don't think that's really the point. The reason this is notable, the reason this is a concern is because it speaks the lack of health of the entire system.
Yeah, the system's failed. So what if they did it once a year? Would that be the end of the world?
I think everyone here is on board with that plan. Yeah. You know,
except Microsoft, I don't think is.
Look,
yeah. Does that mean marketing's running?
When Azure took over Windows Core, the adults were in charge, and things were going to change. And it is notable this year that has not happened, right?
Right.
It's not just them either. You know, I don't know if you follow this, Mary Jo, but every month Microsoft releases a "Here's what we did to Office 365 mm-hmm. this month" post. Over the past 4 or 5 months, it turned into a Microsoft 365 post.
Right.
So now it's exploded out to include all this other stuff. It's still mostly, you know, Office 365, but mm-hmm. that post, if you look at the one they just put up for October, mm-hmm. I would say over 50% of it is stuff they're going to implement later.
This thing is so far off the track that
they're not even talking it. Well, they are still sometimes about features. Here are some things we implemented. There's a lot of confusion around when things are released because sometimes mm-hmm. features are released to what they now call Fast Track on Office 365 commercial. Sometimes they go out to different versions of the product, depending on if you have Office 365 consumer or commercial or Microsoft 365 now. There's always been that kind of weirdness. Like you'll say, here's a new feature. It's called X. X is available only on Word, only on the desktop version, only in 2016, only if you're a Microsoft 365 subscriber. It's like this crazy matrix of requirements for you to get this thing. But if you look at this month's posts, at least half of them are coming in November 2018, mm-hmm. coming by February 2019. Like, I don't even know what they're talking about anymore. Now it's just like a monkey flinging, you know, stuff up on the wall. Like, what are we talking about? Like, I'm reading this thing and I'm like, I have Office 365. I don't think I have any of these features. I don't think I have even one of them.
Yeah, you're not in the Fast Track or Insider program for Office, right?
Actually, I am on the Insider program. Yeah,
oh, you are. I was thinking maybe you've tested some of the things that are in that post that came out today.
Sure.
Have you?
Sure.
Yeah.
I have not personally tested any of the features. I may. Yes, it's possible.
You
I
may have seen them, right? Like them, what was one of the ones I noticed? The thing about the animations in PowerPoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I think what's getting confusing is, unlike Windows, they don't have a really clear delineation, I don't feel like, between what's in the Fast Track, what's in the Insider program in Office, and when mainstream users start getting stuff. And when mainstream users start getting stuff, it is like mm-hmm. Windows in that it doesn't just happen on one day. It takes months to start rolling these things out, right? So that's why I think it's getting even more confusing. And I agree with you. Like, we're seeing them, they're like, and you're going to get this in November, and you're going to get this next year. And
talk about this in November. Lose track. Why are you telling me this stuff? There's so much stuff in this post. There's so much stuff that the post can't cover it all. They have other posts, you know, about some of the other stuff. Like it's gotten kind of insane. And when I think of the matrix of builds releases they have just in Windows, and to me that's exceeded my brain capacity for organizing this in my head. I just can't do it. The Office 365 / Microsoft 365 stuff is, if anything, exponentially more difficult to understand. And now they've thrown this beautiful wrench into it where, you know, this month, for some reason, I don't know why it happened this way this month, but a lot of this stuff is real forward leaning. It's the last day of October. Here's what we just did. It's like, we're talking about this stuff. We're going to do it later. It's like, what? Yeah. Why on earth would you put this in a post now?
Yeah, I know.
About October.
Good question.
It's really strange.
I know. I feel like there really does need to be more synergy between the Insider program and Windows and Office. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of people who are in both, but I feel like they're just run so completely separately. And that the Office Insider one is
an Insider program, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
You can choose which things you want to have.
Right. Like say, especially because now Microsoft talks about Microsoft 365 as a thing, right? Like what if you had one Insider program that was Windows 10, Office 365, and Intune, and it's all one Insider program with one big matrix of features, and you get one email about all the things updating in those, and maybe you don't subscribe to all of them, but you get it in one place at one time.
The problem might be that most of the engagement in the Windows Insider program and in the Office Insider program probably come from consumers.
It does, probably, right?
Yeah. And that's probably why. But yeah, I agree. There should be a single program. I mean, I think most of the people who are enthusiastic enough about this stuff that they want to be part of the Windows Insider program, let's say, would be very eager to test new features in Office. And especially when you make the case, even if it's not for even if they're just consumers, this testing these things together, which I think is the point, would still aid Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm. It'd still be a net positive for Microsoft.
Yeah. But I agree with you. It's getting really crazy to try to track. Like when people say, when they change the ribbon, for example, to the simplified ribbon in Office 365. Oh, yeah. And then it started to roll out to some people and then it stopped. And then it started again, but it looked different from, I believe, from how it was described originally. And people were like, wait, is this what you guys were talking about like 5 months ago when you said they were going to simplify the ribbon? And I'm like, I think same thing.
you could make like a graph or matrix or something, Word on web, Windows, desktop, and Mac, Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint, make the grid. All right, which ones have the new ribbon? And you're like,
right. Yeah.
Word does not have it in every one of those platforms. Excel does not have it on every one of those. It's this weird, it's not like all of the online versions have been upgraded. It's just haphazard. And what I just described is maybe the simple, we're just talking one feature, across several products on three platforms in this case. And that doesn't even begin to describe the complexity of what Office/Microsoft 365 is.
No.
But don't you think there's like a fire burning right now at Microsoft? I mean, they know what this looks like. They're probably very upset. Paul is, but no one's upset.
I more often have the feeling that, because I'll complain about this kind of thing, or I'll write about it, or I'll talk about it on a podcast like this. And I kind of feel like the guy out in the middle of the field by himself, just me. I mean,
that's not true. I mean, it's embarrassing as hell to put out 1809 and then to yank.
No, I mean all of this stuff. I don't mean 1809 is obviously a big thing. It's a big deal.
After the failures of 1803, it calls into question this process.
Yeah,
and at Microsoft, they've got to be asking the same question.
That's my point. But I was the guy in the field on the process 2 years ago. That's my point.
Okay, but now they have proof that you were right.
The point isn't that I'm right. I'm sorry. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. The point isn't that I'm right or I'm not right. I don't mean it like that. The point is I sometimes doubt myself because I see these things. I find them confused. It's very heartening for me for example, we just talked about Office 365 and Microsoft 365. And Mary Jo's like, yeah, you're exactly right. That actually really helps for me because I read this thing and I'm like, does the rest of the world not get confused by this?
Mary Jo, you and I have to say Paul's right more often.
I think we do.
Okay. All right.
Paul, you're right.
No, but Leo's making an interesting point and a question. So publicly, Microsoft is acting like the world is not on fire and everything's okay and they've got this under control and it's all good. And 1809, that was a problem, but we're going to fix it and it's going to be okay. Inside,
who said
there
that?
Have to be meetings.
Who has said that?
John Cable? Only 1/100th of a percent of people.
That was the
were
one thing
affected.
They said publicly about it. And by the way, look it up. How long ago was that? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
They're acting publicly like nothing is wrong.
Here's new builds of the next one. Forget, don't worry.
Their
we're
strategy
right.
might be, well, just don't say anything. We'll fix it. Don't say anything. Nobody noticed. We'll just fix
it. Okay.
The only people who notice, honestly, are people who listen to this show. Insiders, the people who know. They're super enthusiasts.
But that's the only people. There are millions of those people.
Right.
People are starting to notice who aren't like enthusiasts because they're hearing like, hey, there's something wrong with Windows 10.
It trickles
10.
Out like, eventually.
It was supposed to be this thing, right? And it didn't come.
We have said this so many times, how important communication is. I just being quiet and hoping that a problem goes away is never the right approach. Right. It never is.
I was going to say, I feel like when it does come back out, they better not just quietly re-release it and we just figure it out. there should be a blog post saying, okay, like here's what happened. Here's what happened. Here's what we did. Here's why we think this is back on track. There should be something that they put out that acknowledges this, right?
I think they will do that. They've done that in the past, but it will be like that John Cable post from before. And I'm sorry if the post is, we're the Microsoft version of TSA. We've solved the last problem. You know, congratulations. But because the process is broken, you don't even know what the next problem is going to be. And you're going to be victimized by that as well.
I mean,
keeps happening.
Right. The only thing they have said publicly is they're going to have that new upvoting system in the feedback hub where people can mark things as severe, levels of severity. And that's good. But I feel like there has to be more than that. And I feel like if they did a real kind of a post-mortem on what happened here, you know, the way they do when Azure goes down or Office 365 goes down and said, here's what went wrong. And here are the things in the future we're going to change to make this not happen again. I feel like that would make people feel more at ease.
Maybe we should stop ignoring the people that complain when things don't work.
Yeah.
That's the thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
But yeah, I really doubt it's coming out today. And so the October update is actually the November update. as we know.
The March update was actually the May update.
It was pretty much, yeah.
So, isn't it just you guys who call it the October
update? No, they officially named it the October update.
No. Okay, so maybe that was a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
Fall 2018 would be sufficient.
Yeah, I think
that's
better.
Well, I think the reason they went to 1H19 was now they're, or 19-1H, whatever it is. Now they're a little more vague, right? We're not promising it's going to be 6 months exactly. It's going to be sometime in this first half of the year.
Maybe I misunderstood you guys, but my sense was 19H1 is temporary, and then when they get closer, they'll rename it 1903.
That's what I believe.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Which would be a mistake.
I don't know. Everything seems to be changing. Why can't I mean, right. I don't know.
Yeah, wait till you hear the code name today. That'll really throw a wrench in this whole thing.
All right, I want
to
take a little
start drinking. I want to
take a little time
starts.
Out, and there is some good news, and there's also some acquisition news. And you didn't put this in your notes, but I think we really ought to talk about IBM Red Hat a little bit.
Sure.
No.
Yeah, we could.
You don't have.
There's a Microsoft angle to it.
Sure. And it's also there's a big angle because it's really about the ascendancy of open source software. I think a little bit, and IBM is doing this to compete with Azure very clearly. So that's my.
According to them, they're already bigger than Azure.
Already. We don't have to compete. We're as big as a Pikachu after a windstorm.
With a fan.
With a fan in its butt. But that is the advantage of that costume is you never get hot in it.
That's good.
It's very comfortable. The disadvantage is the hands are sealed, so I can't actually. I couldn't even hold a bag of candy. I just. All I could do is go, Pikachu! Our show today brought to you by PryLock Security. Now, I know that you know, because you listen to this show, you're sophisticated. You know how to avoid getting bit by malware, phishing scams, spear phishing, candy drops, social engineering. But do the employees in your company know? They really are the weak link. You can do everything, as we have done here, to sew up your network. But a spear phishing attack that comes in over my name, over Lisa's name, that says, here's that report, I'd like you to work on that and get it to me in the morning, that's going to work every time. Unless you train them what to look for. That's what PryLock Security offers, a best-of-breed security training, not just a slide deck that's over and done with. No, it's a platform that you can quite easily, without any IT support, turn on. It's very affordable. They're using I saw the networking diagram. I was impressed. Some very sophisticated Amazon Web Services stuff. They save a lot of money, and that way they can save you as much as 70% over comparable programs. I'll tell you a price in just a second that'll blow your mind. And you get a year-long continuous education for your employees. Let me explain how it works. Set this up with one click. You don't have to be an IT pro. You can get a full year's training, whether your company's 50 people or 5,000 people. The first thing that happens is you get a 3-day baseline phishing test. So this, don't tell your employees. There's no point in letting them know ahead of time. Or you can. You could say, hey, I want you to be extra cautious this week. We're worried. But whatever, they will get some phishing emails, and you will get a report on how many clicked, how many fell for it, what kind of information they handed over, that kind of thing. You'll also get a custom user page for every employee with their name on it, with resources that they can call on to improve their own security, things like password managers and antivirus solutions. They'll also get security awareness training. And I took the training, and I was really impressed. Everything in there, I agreed with 100%. It's fun because it starts like a normal training, and then a hacker gets involved. And there's some gamification. You get to actually design a phishing email yourself in the training. And for compliance mandates, they have all the required features, including a 10-question final assessment. So that's done. Now your employees are trained. They know what to look for. They understand. It's not just rule-based. It's not like, don't do this. Don't click on links. Don't. It's the psychology of hacking, because we can't be prepared for everything hackers are going to come up with. They're endlessly inventive. But what we can understand better is their motivation, what they're looking for, and how they work, and how they use psychology to their benefit. And this you learn in the Prilock security training. Then, this is devious as hell, but I love it. They automatically schedule and run 24 additional completely random phishing tests throughout the year. So on average of twice a month, your employees are going to get a phishing email targeted at them. You actually, as the IT guy, if you want, you can go in there and create, with the advanced setup, create a really targeted campaign, you know, with the boss's name and stuff. Or you could just use their library. They have 600, a library of 600 of the most effective phishing emails, which they have also tweaked as time goes by. They're really trying to trick your employees. And if your employee falls for it, and there are levels of falling for it, so you'll get reports on how many opened the phishing email, how many clicked a link in the email, how many downloaded attachments from the email and ran them, how many of them, when asked to enable macros, well, that's a bad one, how many entered data, like you know, passwords. We need you to change your password for the bank account. Just give us your old password and we'll provide a new one. And how many fall for that? Or, you know, what's your credit card number? What's your company credit card? That kind of thing. We're checking to see. We've lost track of who has which credit card. What's yours? And then you'll get a report if they fall for this, and they will be automatically enrolled in an appropriate additional training. If you know, they click on the wrong thing or they do the wrong thing, you get 24/7 real time analytics and reports. This is so great. Now, it's not just for companies; they have other things you can do. For instance, in the training, you can send a friend a fish that lets your users send a friend or a colleague a phishing email of their own design and a learning page to show what they missed. The one-year security program Prilock offers for companies as small as 25 employees for just $395. How about that? 1 year for $395. And they do have a special gift card program, a single license, that you can buy and give to friends and family. If you have a family member, we all do, who like falls for this every time, you can enroll them, and they'll get tested with 2 fish tests a month for a full year. And that's very affordable, too. Look, we know you can't learn everything hackers are going to do, but your employees can learn how to defend against social engineering, candy drops, phishing emails, all the techniques hackers use to get them to hand over the keys to the kingdom. You need Prilock. Learn more at prilock.com/twit. And if you use my name, Leo, as a promo code, you'll save 30%. So that really makes it even more affordable. Prilock, like privacy lock, prilock.com/twit. Twit, Prilock Securities Training. Well, I've looked at a bunch of them. This is the best one out there and easily the most affordable. Prilock Security at prilock.com/twit. Use my name, Leo, for 30% off. Back we go to Paul and Mary Jo, the queen of notepad and the king of nothing.
Yep.
And he's
that's a kind of way of saying it that my kids would say.
Boss of
me. You're the king of something, all right.
I'll give you that, king. This is good news. I read this last week, and I wanted to ask you about it. Defender is now in a sandbox. What does that mean exactly?
Right. So, okay, first I want to say this is a big announcement, and I felt like Microsoft put it out at the very end of the day, East Coast time, last week, and I was like, wait, you should have made a big deal out of this.
It seems like a bigger deal, yeah.
Yeah. So they're saying Windows Defender, which is their antivirus software.
Which, by the way, does very well. We were looking at some antivirus results. It's among the best.
I think it's good. I use it. First antivirus to run inside of a sandbox. So what's interesting about this is if you run this in a sandbox, your antivirus program, it supposedly will let you keep bugs and exploits from spreading into other processes or to the underlying OS, because you're running it in this isolation tank, kind of. So this is like, wow. And so many security experts on Twitter were like, this is huge.
It's how it should be.
We've been asking them to do this.
Yeah.
And we've been asking everyone to do this. And this is amazing. They're doing
it. Do other antivirus solutions do this?
No.
Now, it's not by default. I have to turn it on?
No. So right now, they're saying it's going to be tested among insiders. Oh, okay. First, but if you have Windows 10 version 1703, you can go in and manually turn it on now.
1803?
Anything 1703 or more recent.
How do I turn it on?
Yeah, in the blog post, it's a list of things you have to do, starting with going to the command prompt and run as administrator. Then there's a thing you have to type that's a long character string here about setting up the sandbox. Then it will validate you, restart your PC, and it should be on.
Wow.
So, I'm just curious why no one else does this.
I know. I'm not sure if it's hard to do it. Not really sure. But, you know, do you remember this, Paul? You probably do. Remember a long time ago, Microsoft was testing something called Gazelle, which was using sandbox isolation inside of a browser to do something? As I recall, and so they've done a lot of things around how to use sandboxes to isolate things for security purposes before, and they've done it in Microsoft research and testing over the years. And I don't know if this is connected to that, the result of that, or what, but it says Microsoft's move will prevent attackers from being able to use Defender as a way to take over other Windows PCs. So it seems big to me. Like, when I saw this, I'm like, wow, this is like something they should have been really talking up, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think insiders have, like, they are saying it's going to start testing with insiders, but I haven't heard if it's in any insider builds yet or if it's something to come in.
I just turned it on using those command lines in your article.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It says, you know, success.
Yeah.
So now what? Is it just from now on running in a sandbox? Will I notice anything different?
I don't know. I don't know enough about this to know.
Yeah, you just can't update the definitions anymore. It'll be fine.
And the idea is that a virus, because it's in a sandbox, a virus can't get to it, and it will successfully sandbox any suspicious,
malicious code.
Code
as soon as it gets, as soon as it is executed, it'll go into the sandbox, I guess.
Yeah, I want to know more about this. And even Steve Gibson didn't talk about it. I think he might have mentioned it briefly, but I'd like to know more.
Yeah.
Oh, and I probably should reboot now, right? I would bet.
Yeah, it says reboot. Yeah. Why not? What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? I'm just going to reboot now in the middle of the show, as I have done in the past. And I'm not. The good news is I no longer am tasked with the responsibility of recording these shows.
Right. Through the laptop you're using.
Yes, they've wisely. Yeah. Which
things have improved. It's improved, from a technical
hasn't it, Paul? Yeah. That was a Halloween nightmare.
That's still one of my best memories. Early days of the show. Like, so you go to start, he's like, and you hit the thing, he's like, and then don't click it. He's like, and they bloop.
Show was over. I literally rebooted the machine we were recording on. Oh. And the shame of it was that it didn't reboot Skype, so Paul saw me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I had the 1 second where of dawning realization on Leo's face.
Like, oh. What have I done?
Like, I know what he just did.
That was pretty pathetic.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I don't know more about this, but there's a whole lengthy Microsoft blog post about it where you can read for more details, but I don't. No more.
I have to say, for years now, I've said, don't download a third-party antivirus. Continue to use Defender. You've got it with Windows 10, and it's all you need. And third-party results show that that's the case. Mm-hmm. It did have top – it got every virus that they threw at it. I can't remember who did it. It wasn't Virus Bulletin.
Oh, yeah. I remember that, too.
But it had one of the highest incidences of false positives. On the other hand, I've never got a false positive, so that doesn't bother me. But the fact that it caught every virus.
I know.
Oh, and they're reminding me that you would be happy about this. Steve was talking about Hadoop for at least 15 minutes yesterday.
Was he really? What?
There is a...
Yeah, there was some security thing with Hadoop. I saw that.
There's a flaw in MapReduce. There's an open source version of MapReduce. MapReduce is a Google... tool that they used to use, then that got open sourced, and there was a flaw in that, which has been patched. But yeah, he loved saying Hadoop, just like you do.
It's just one of those fun words.
Yeah. I just told him Mary Jo would be proud of you, Steve.
I would have. Indeed.
One of the things that I am excited about with my new iPad is that for a mere $150, I was able to get built-in LTE connectivity.
Incredible.
But that means...
One more thing.
And then
you got Apple jacked.
I got Apple jacked. this is the future. It's interesting because for a while, you couldn't get LTE in devices. But it's back in a big way, thanks partly to Microsoft, this notion of always connected PCs. And I think it's all preparatory for 5G, where you really do have mobile internet that's very fast, right?
Yeah, but even today, it's awesome. When you
it's fast enough. It's often faster than your home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, so this was interesting. Recently, Microsoft had WinHack. Remember, they used to have this show called Windows Hardware Engineering Conference. So they still have this. It's now in China. And the past 2 weeks, there was a WinHack in Taipei. There was one in...
What could possibly go wrong?
Shenzhen, yeah. Well, so the reason they have it there is that's where their OEMs
made.
Are.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so it was interesting to see what they talked about at this series of WinHack. So they talked about a lot of things you would assume, like Windows Server 2019. They were talking to them about that. They were talking about fundamentals and PCs, like modern standby, autopilot, all that stuff. They even talked about Windows 10 and S mode with them, so that thing's not dead. It's still being talked up to OEMs. But then they had a track about always connected PCs, and they went so far as to tell OEMs, this is going to be the future of business devices. So you should start designing devices with built-in LTE, and this is the way it's going to be.
Is that because workforces are now mobile? Because, I mean, if you're at the office, you don't need this.
Well, so here's their pitch. Here's their pitch. If you're a company and you spend a ton of money having a corporate network set up and you pay all this money to run your own network, what if you just had devices with LTE built in and you could use them securely with LTE built in?
The other thing is those employees out in the world, they don't necessarily want these guys connecting to public Wi-Fi networks with their
own. No, they really don't want that. Yeah, they don't. You're right. So, but you're saying let Verizon do it kind of, or?
Yeah, that's what they're kind of saying.
And are they putting in special security measures on the hardware? Right.
That's an interesting question. And a lot of people were saying, what about the pricing plans? Like, I'm not going to pay like 10 extra bucks every month.
Much more expensive than having a corporate network.
That's what people are saying. But what if with always connected devices, you have the built-in LTE and eSIM is coming, right? So the thought is maybe there are going to be negotiated plans. Always coming, not here still, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe there will be negotiated plans. Maybe there'll be some kind of a corporate rate if you have X number of PCs with built-in LTE and everyone's using that inside. I don't know.
Yeah. I think Qualcomm deserves a little bit of credit here because their entry into the Windows PC market probably helped jumpstart this again on the Intel side as well. Because one of the things you get for free when you go over to the Snapdragon stuff is this kind of functionality, right? And so, you know, that NVX2, which is a terrible computer no matter which chip is in it, it does have LTE capabilities and it's good for a number of reasons, including the things you guys all just said, but there's also, you know, kind of a seamless switching between them as well. You don't have to really think about it. You could be working on something in Wi-Fi in your home. You hop in the car, or bus or wherever you're going, and you can still work. You're on LTE. You don't really.
Yeah.
It just kind of shifts. You don't really have to worry about it.
Yeah, nice. That was the best thing about the MVX too, because I was always a skeptic about LTE. I'm like, yeah, but you could just tether your phone. But it's so different when it's just automatically handing it off. Yeah,
automatically on and off, and it always chooses Wi-Fi when it's available, obviously. Yeah. It's nice.
I'm excited.
Me too.
I mean, I always will use Wi-Fi. We have Wi-Fi. We're always going to have Wi-Fi in the office.
Yeah.
And it's going to always be fast. I mean, we have 10 gigabit internet here.
Sure.
But I love the idea of being able to travel. And by the way, Paul, mm-hmm. if you know, you and I, Mary Jo too, for that matter, leave the country a lot. That's a nice thing to have to to use a coffee shop or find one.
Yep.
Yep.
Or use the hotel or cruise ship Wi-Fi, which we know will be compromised. Yep. Be able to use LTE, and if you have a good plan,
I got to look this up because I am a day or two away from. One day left on my current cycle in Project Fi, which Ellie mentioned, because this past month, for the first time ever, I hit bill protection at 6 gigabytes.
Me
I've done that before.
Yeah.
But I also hit 15 gigabytes, which Ooh, means your data throttled. Gets knocked down.
Yeah.
I've been dealing with it. It's okay. But tomorrow
Do you have a data only SIM for Fi that you use?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I have one of those too. Yep.
I'm going to order one for the new iPad, I think.
Definitely. That's a great way to use that. Yep. That's the cheapest route you can go.
$10 a gigabyte and no more than $60 a month.
For the caps, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty fast. If you are in an area where T-Mobile, Sprint, or U.S. Cellular has good mm-hmm. connectivity, you're in good
It's great international.
And it's, you know? Yeah, it's free international. I mean, not free, but there's no
Yeah, it's no additional.
Concept. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I used that extensively when we traveled in Europe. So,
in fact, almost nine gigabytes of the 15 I used was on the data only SIM.
By the way, they support eSIMs on Google Fi because I did not put a SIM in this Pixel 3. Yeah. You and I just bought an iPhone XR, which has dual SIM capability, but no carrier.
Yeah, but not here.
But no carrier but supports
it. Actually, I saw that. So I assumed it was on the eSIM. So
one is
I saw
one
a story
isn't.
About that, and I shut it down, popped out this thing, and there's a SIM card in it.
Well, but that's for SIM 1. But then there's a second SIM, which is not yet working. That's an eSIM.
Oh, really? Right. Okay.
But why would SIM 1 be the non-SIM? Like, okay.
No, that's so I great. Read that, and I asked them about that when I was buying the Pixel 3, and they're like, no, there's not an eSIM. And I was like, I think there is.
Oh, they've had that maybe, since.
Only if, but see, you were buying it at a Verizon store. That was your mistake.
No, at the Google store.
Oh, because that's,
Which is even weirder,
if you're doing
right?
Fi.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you saw, I'm embarrassed now. Saw a picture of my girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hot Pikachu.
Another Pikachu.
Another one. Actually, Lisa.
She has hands, though.
Lisa's wearing that. Yeah, she has hands and feet and legs. Yeah.
She has all the parts.
She's got all of them. what was I saying? I've got distracted.
Nope, nobody knows. But go ahead.
No, I didn't have to put a SIM in this. In fact, I started to transfer the SIM from the Pixel 2, and then I didn't. Yeah. I realized, oh, I don't have
way,
to.
Here's how awesome that is, because I've been going back and forth between the Pixel 2 XL and the 3 XL. When you get the new phone and you go eSIM to eSIM, it just says, hey, do you want to sign? And you say yes, and it just transfers everything
it
over.
Said,
the other phone it says, hey, someone's taking this. Yeah. Are you okay with that? Say, yes.
Yeah,
then you
won't
be able to
use it. Yeah.
You go back and forth.
You can go back and forth?
Yep.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
So if I broke my Pixel 3, I go back to Pixel 2.
Yep, you can go to the other one. There'll be a little Project Fi thing up in the corner. Click it, say, do you want to use your thing? And say, yep, and just takes it away.
Awesome.
It's awesome. eSIM is awesome.
So that's, you're both Pixel 3s now.
Mm-hmm. No, I went back to the 2.
He threw his away.
I sent it back to Google. I didn't I'm not an insane person.
He hated it. He sent it back.
Oh, you're going to love it, Mary Jo. You're going to be happy.
I'm keeping mine. I'm going to hang on.
Yeah. You're going to be very, very
Well, it's a big upgrade for you. It's for me, it was kind of a downgrade.
I am looking at Microsoft's blog post, and the issue with sandboxing and antivirus, now I recognize this problem, because both Norton and McAfee have been vectors for attack, because antiviruses have to run at ring zero and have all sorts of privileges. They're basically escalated privileges. They're a great vector for bad guys. So what Microsoft's saying is that while there were no attacks in the wild that we know of, we wanted to be proactive in preventing the antivirus from being a pathway for attack.
which is a
proactive security. Whoever has thought of such a thing?
So by sandboxing it, they're assuring that if anything does find a flaw in Defender, it can't then propagate into the outside world.
Okay.
So that's that, as I understand it from scanning the blog post, is the point. And that makes a lot of sense, because it's one of the reasons I don't recommend third-party antivirus is, as with any program, installing a program potentially installs a security flaw, and it's really problematic with antiviruses because they run at such high privilege.
You know, I just find them, as a consumer, as an individual, I find third-party antivirus to be infuriating.
Yeah, and they don't do you any good.
I probably reviewed, 12 or more laptops this year, and the sheer number of times one of these things has popped up and said, hey, your antivirus is about to expire. You just kind of want to murder the thing. It is so horrible.
Yeah. No, and it's my routine. And I know I sometimes shock and annoy people on the radio show. Because, on the radio show, I'm talking to the regulars, normals. And I say, don't get an antivirus. You don't need one. If you're using Windows 10, Defender is fine. And now I can even say it's better.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of, Windows Vista Secrets, which I wrote with Brian Livingston.
Yeah.
Yep. The reason I mention it is we had a fundamental, I don't know, we had a fundamental disagreement over security updates in Windows, and we were just casually talking about something about the book, and he said, well, just to be clear, there's a recommendation in the book that users turn off Windows updates, right, and only install updates when they know they're okay, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, no, just to be clear, you're an insane person, right? Like that's crazy to me, And I think one of the best things they ever did in Windows, finally, after really screwing around in different ways, was to add the antivirus and anti-malware definition stuff right to Windows updates. Like that's the kind of updates you need to get all the time. And that's the one thing they continue to do right. When that product, it suffered from so many bad reviews, and I never understood it. And I felt like the security software in particular. Oh. What's Defender today? What used to be called?
It was Giant, right? It was the Giant.
Giant anti-spy.
It was the same thing they did when they.
What was the thing called? One something?
It was
one.
Terrible. It was the same thing they did when Microsoft wanted to do a CD-ROM encyclopedia. They bought the worst, the cheapest encyclopedia thing, the one they sell at grocery stores. Actually, the one you got free, one volume a month at grocery stores.
Did Bill Gates' 1995 book include a CD-ROM?
Yes.
I think it did, right?
I have it.
Yeah. And we, zero mentions of the internet.
Yeah. It's all going to be on CD in the future. Yeah. But they bought it, but that was the basis. And they have clearly, it's probably all new code by now. It's clearly been updated.
Do they even have this by now?
Became Defender. It was security.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
OneCare.
No, but before OneCare, it was Giant. They bought
It was called Giant Anti
Giant Antivirus or something. Yeah,
it wasn't antivirus. It was anti something.
It wasn't great. It was notoriously not the greatest. Yeah, Anti-spyware.
Yeah.
But I think they I don't know what they were looking for. They got an engine. Giant software company, which like Brian Livingston, is receded into the mess of.
Well, and I also like Brian Livingston was actually quite small. It's just,
Come on, guys.
No, Brian, I remember Brian. Now I just looked him up. He is now doing business stuff, business writing. He's doing, he's writing about investments, stuff like that. Was the Windows Secret guy.
Yeah.
He was at InfoWorld for years. It's funny.
Back in the day when you had to turn to maybe a monthly magazine or a book to find out secrets about
I love the Windows Secrets series. That was an awesome series.
Yeah. The problem was, as we got late, when I got involved, I remember the, the people from IDG, whatever they were calling it that year, would, kind of come down and talk to us and say, we want to make sure that the secrets in the book are not available on the web.
Oh, good luck.
And I said, I have bad news for you. That's not how the world works.
And if they're not available on the web now, they will be the day.
Yeah, I mean, how many of these are unique to the book? It's like zero. What are you talking about? This is not how we disseminate information. Woody I'm not says, waiting for you to publish this thing.
Encarta was
and never updated.
Encarta was based on the Funk and Wagnalls Encyclopedia.
That's awesome.
Which is a Johnny Carson joke, but true.
Not Funky Winkerstein or whatever it was called.
No, he always used to say, when he did Karnak, he said, the questions have been sealed in a mayonnaise jar under Funk and Wagnalls' porch. Last week. Do you remember that? No, you're too young to remember that.
Oh, I remember Karnak. I don't remember the Funk and Wagnalls.
Gosh, I miss Johnny Carson.
I do too.
Yeah, what a... He really... Now what do we have? Lightweights. Lightweights, I tells ya. All right. I want to... You're going to do the GitHub, and that's now final. But I think we can tie it to IBM's acquisition of Red Hat. They seem both motivated by the same... interests, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, to an extent.
Money?
Well, no, because IBM paid a ridiculous premium for Red Hat.
$36 billion.
Crazy.
Wasn't it? Or 34? 34. One of those two.
It was
free.
Yeah.
Isn't it free as in beer? Free as in ponies? Yeah.
Free as in $36 billion.
But see, Red Hat was kind of... a unicorn in all this because they gave away Linux. They still gave it away, but they made money on services, made significant amount of money on services.
Definitely.
Hundreds of millions of dollars a year, but nowhere near what IBM paid for them. IBM paid, I think, a premium of $600 a share or something, some ridiculous amount to acquire them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the coverage of this has been so weird because I saw so many stories saying this is IBM buying a cloud play. I'm like, so guys, Red Hat doesn't have a cloud play.
Yeah, not really. That was the hybrid part of this. I think that was the hybrid.
Yeah, but the idea is like just as Linux is on Azure, IBM wants to offer, well, I don't know what I shouldn't speak for Ginni Rometty, but it sounds like IBM's kind of turning its back on the Watson plan, which was going to save the company.
Yeah, I think that's the key takeaway.
And going back to cloud services, they've always been since they got out of the PC business, they've been a services company, right?
Yeah, right. And they've been, we should say, to be fair, IBM's been a big backer of open source from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Right. Like, that's why so many people are like, oh, IBM. I'm like, well, you know, they actually were big backers of open source, way ahead of Microsoft and other companies.
And,
so.
And if you're on the internet, you're running on Linux, often Red Hat Linux. I mean, it's not at all unusual. So,
it's totally, well, it's the corporate.
Today it's not. We need to give them some credit for that because actually they've supported this for so long. I'm not sure it made sense to anyone back then, but their model has proven to work for sure.
Red Hats, yes.
And IBM's.
And IBM.
Supporting and IBM's. Yeah. So just for people, I kind of know, because I used to do stuff for HP 20 years ago. I kind of understand what a services company is. But would you explain, you know, what is the modern IBM's business?
If we could explain that, we'd all be rich.
It's a trap.
I know. I mean, here's how I would explain it. So, even if you give away the operating system for free, you can still make money on an operating system or on any kind of software, right? The way you do it is you kind of give customers a guarantee about the operating system. You're like, hey, if something fails, if you put our applications or your applications on this, and we're backing it and it fails, we're the one throat to choke, as people always like to say, right? So,
jeez, I'm going to remember that one. Holy
you remember
cow.
That saying? That's,
no.
That's a famous saying.
That's
vicious. So, right. So this is how companies tell you to use all of their products in a suite. They're like, you know, if you use Oracle and Microsoft and IBM and Red Hat, who do you go to if something fails?
Right. You want one.
Why
vendor.
Not have one throat to choke
right.
when something goes wrong?
And that was HP would do that. So HP wanted to sell minis and microcomputers. So they would. They had a vast force of consultants who would go in and help a business computerize. Now,
implement it. Yeah.
That was back, you know, when computers were first entering the workplace. Today, they're in there. But I think IBM's, do they still do mainframes? They probably do, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're doing big iron.
Right.
They're doing big installations, thousands of seats. And there's a lot of money.
The question here is, how credible a threat is this to Microsoft and Azure in the enterprise?
So I don't think this even competes with Azure in the enterprise, to be honest, because I think what Red Hat gives them is more maybe it competes with Azure Stack more than it competes with Azure. It gives them the on-prem piece, right?
Well, all right. Maybe I should have just said the entire Microsoft stack, because it really is. It's a hybrid play, I guess.
Right. And, you know, the other part that Red Hat owns is JBoss. And so there's this whole other set of middleware that comes with Red Hat, not just Linux, but all this other tools and applications around kind of assembling applications. So I feel like they bought something that gives them more credibility on-prem. And so this is why you hear IBM saying this is our hybrid play. You know, they're like, oh, public cloud, it's over. Where all the action is in hybrid. They're actually going around and saying this. It's because they don't have a public cloud. That's why they're saying it. But yeah, it doesn't really hurt Azure. But the one piece I'm really curious about is, so Microsoft brought Red Hat Enterprise Linux over to Azure. It's one of the main distributions that they sell on Azure because it's a big corporate distribution of Linux. And so I would assume IBM would just let that agreement ride. But, you know, Red Hat Enterprise Linux is on AWS, it's on Azure, and you kind of wonder, like, is IBM going to try to stop that, thinking, hey, we want to be the one place you go to get Red Hat? But I think that would be crazy if they stop it.
I don't see that happening. You can't ignore that kind of distribution, you know?
Agree. And, you know, what was funny was it was really hard for Microsoft to get Red Hat on Azure. They were the last holdout of all the Linux vendors. They really didn't trust Microsoft. You should see the agreement they signed with Microsoft. It was crazy. All the kind of loopholes they left themselves. It was like a prenup. Yeah. it kind of throws an interesting light into what's going to happen there. It was an interesting buy. And the way we all found out about it was pretty funny. I don't know if you guys saw this. Bloomberg did a tweet Sunday, late afternoon, and they're like, We think IBM's about to buy Red Hat. And like 1 minute later, IBM announced it.
We were about to do Twit. It just broke right before the big news show.
I sent the story, the Bloomberg story, to Brad, and I said, we might want to keep our eye on this. And he goes, I already wrote my post. It's up. I saw the Bloomberg thing, but they had in fact already officially announced it.
I don't think that was the plan. I think the plan was to announce it Monday. But then when it started leaking, they were like, Yeah, but, you know, so Microsoft, they just finished their acquisition, finalized it of GitHub. So, again, this kind of comes back to everybody's trying to get in on the open source action these days, right?
I just love it because as a longtime advocate of open source, and even a few years ago, people were telling me, you know, open source and enterprise, things like Sugar CRM and stuff, is really starting to take off.
Yep.
There's still a role for proprietary software, right? I mean, what's the deal? Why is open source taking off?
Well, if you look at Azure, for example, 50% of the virtual machines on Azure are Linux. They're not Windows Server, which is crazy. Like you would think, okay, Microsoft, of course, everybody's going to be running Windows Server in a VM on Azure. But in a lot of fields, even fields like banking, there's a heavy use of Linux out there. And so I think it's just people wanted to use Linux either because they're familiar with it, they've used it. It's free, right? Open source. It's open to be patched, updated by people. I don't think it's just like a trendy thing. I think people have used it and are continuing to use it for real applications.
To be clear here, when we talk about Linux running on Azure.
Yeah.
Are we mostly talking about Linux running in a server setup? Yeah.
Yes.
Not as a desktop.
No. Right. It's still not the year of desktop Linux.
No, I know that. But I'm trying to.
That makes me so mad.
What I was sort of heading towards was I wonder if Microsoft's insight into the adoption of Linux on Azure, which they would have had very early on, obviously.
Right.
Plays any role in their decision making around Windows? You know that obviously they went with Linux for Azure Sphere. That's a specialty implementation, more akin to the desktop than to the server, I guess. But Windows seems to be getting short thrift these days. You know, and of course I come mostly from the desktop perspective, but I wonder if they look at this Linux thing and just sort of think, you know, this is. they can be kind of aggressive about, you know, what's more important to the future of Microsoft? You know, it's not server, it's not Windows, it's Azure, and who cares what people are doing on Azure?
Yes.
As long as they're using Azure.
You know? Totally agree. And there are also applications where Linux has the dominant share. Like supercomputing, it's Linux, not Windows, that runs supercomputers pretty much. And embedded computing, Linux is still the leader. It's not Windows in the embedded space. That's why they went with
SQL Server to Linux, right? I mean, it's not an experiment. It's not a hobby. It's not a side thing.
It's real. Okay. And the new Microsoft is very agnostic about, hey, what do you want to run? You want to run Linux here? Okay, we want to be the one to deliver it to you.
But what is it about open source that makes it compelling even to the enterprise, or specifically the enterprise? Yeah. I can't even...
That's a great question.
It is. It is a good question.
Well, I think Leo kind of asked it earlier. I'm not... I didn't mean to...
That's why I like it so much.
Yeah.
We're kind of kicking around the idea of... Some people just are used to it. They grew up with it. They've worked on it. They've developed tools on it. They feel like some of the best tools out there are on it. So they're like, hey, I want to use Linux. You know, I know there are tools. There are certain places where Windows tools and Windows applications are what I have to use. But sometimes the open source tools are what I know and what work for me.
This is just kind of an aversion to monoculture, you know, like that once you go open source, you're not beholden to like a single giant technology firm like Microsoft.
That's kind of the argument that if you're going to make something a platform, it should be an open platform.
True.
Proprietary software on top of it. In fact, you will inevitably, but you don't want a base. Yeah, you don't want Docker to be closed source. You don't want Kubernetes to be closed source. You want it to be something that you can see and modify and trust.
Right.
If you kind of flip the Azure discussion around from the perspective of Red Hat, let's say, or Red Hat's customers or whatever, you can be kind of predatory about where this thing runs, right? Mm-hmm. We may not like Microsoft for some reason, but if Microsoft has the best solution for this kind of thing, we'll be on Microsoft. But if someone comes out later with something that has better scale or better prices or better performance, whatever it might be, you could move this to anywhere. You know, one of the nice things about the cloud, I guess, is that using it in this fashion is that you get less lock-in than you might have had in the past, where your entire enterprise is running on Windows Server, you know, and you have distributed data centers if you're a big company geographically around the country or the world, whatever it is, but you're kind of locked to it, you know.
Yeah,
you're not good. It's hard to move from that to something else.
Well, and you're dependent on Microsoft.
That's what I mean, right. Like as a single
buyer. You know, you got one throat to choke. Not always.
Or you're. You're being,
sometimes your
you're going to use this.
You're being choked on the throat from one company, perhaps.
I don't think cost is as big a deal as people might say.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think there's a savings there at all. I don't think.
Well,
that's
even
the
if
point.
There is, it's meager if you're an enterprise,
right? Yeah.
Then the other thing that we were talking about on Twitter on Sunday, and I think it's kind of true, is that in the cloud, operating systems are relevant. So use what works best for you, because the user doesn't know or care. And if you're running a web application or software as a service, what it's running on is you just want something that was, I think, scalability is probably important.
You know, I keep coming back to this Azure thing. It's funny.
Yep.
You know, when you think about Microsoft, I mean, Microsoft had a problem, mostly on the client, let's say, but... which is similar to the problem Apple's going to face at some point, where they're really like a one product company, right? They have all this stuff that kind of builds off of it, but none of it is as big as that one thing. When the need for that one thing disappears, you're kind of screwed because, and I think Azure gives Microsoft this thing that is for the future. That is not scalable in the sense that Azure itself is scalable, but it's a more scalable product line where you're not beholden to one thing being successful, you know? That if this one thing doesn't work, we're screwed because if the whole customer base shifts somewhere else, we can't shift with it, which is kind of what happened to Windows and will eventually happen to the iPhone. You know, Azure is this thing. It's a more diverse solution. You know, it's not even a solution. It's thousands of solutions is what it is. You know, it gives them a good footing for the future.
Yeah. I'd agree.
So GitHub.
Yeah.
That's closed.
How are they going to make money on GitHub?
I don't, but that's, I think GitHub is just more like a kiss to
it. So why do you think they bought it? So I think it was Amy Hood talked about how Microsoft likes to buy communities. But what does that even mean? What does that mean? Like, what's the, what are they?
So to me, why they bought GitHub is Microsoft really, one of the big parts of their business still is development tools, right? And developers are still a huge part of their audience. More and more people are using GitHub as a development platform, including Microsoft. A lot of Microsoft's work is on GitHub, right? So I feel like, you know, it fits in with them wanting to get in more with the open source crowd, wanting to stay connected with developers wherever they work and however they work with whatever kinds of tools they want to use. And I think it actually made a lot of sense. To me, this was an acquisition that I could kind of explain and rationalize to myself way more than LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn took a lot of mental gymnastics.
Well, I still don't think that.
As we know, though, they made a lot of money. They're making money on LinkedIn now.
They're
right?
making money, right?
Wait, making money? I don't think they're making money.
Said in the, we never have. No, we haven't talked about the results yet.
There's revenue. This thing is not.
They're earning
it's not
revenues.
Popular. I believe one of the big changes that just occurred is they no longer report the fact that they're not making profits.
Yeah,
they used to.
That's buying a community. Buying
LinkedIn. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they when they talk about buying communities, they cite that as an example. They're like, you know, LinkedIn, it has its own kind of force. It has its own set of users who identify with the platform. GitHub, same thing. So that's what she meant, I think, when she said buy communities.
If Google had acquired GitHub, do you think that would have impacted Microsoft's use of GitHub?
Maybe.
And maybe that was the problem, right? That they needed to make one of the things they needed to do was keep this out of the hands of a company that's a direct competitor, perhaps.
Maybe.
Was Google rumored to be in the?
I think that Google was rumored to be in the acquisition.
Ironically, they don't use Git.
Oh, they don't use it at all.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, there was a Google employee was giving a presentation and said that they had made an offer of whatever amount, and they were outbid by Microsoft.
Yeah.
Here's the really funny thing. Linus Torvalds wrote both Git and Linux. Hmm. I hope somebody said he does have some stock in Red Hat, that he was granted stock when Red Hat was founded.
Hmm.
But you know what? You can look
at. Do you mean Red Hat or GitHub? When you said
Red Hat, but I don't know what GitHub is a separate company. The software they use though, Git, was written by Linus Torvalds for Linux.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. Wow.
We can thank Linus. I mean, you know, he's done some stuff that's made a big difference in the world. Out
Who is this Linus of whom you speak? I've not heard.
The funny thing is, he's lately become notorious for being cranky.
Yeah.
And he took a month off. To get his, there were 6 weeks off to get his head in order, and he's back working on Linux now. I have,
do you think
I've
he did
met
scream
him.
Therapy?
I've interviewed him several times. I love the guy.
Oh, have you really?
Oh, he's a wonderful guy.
Oh, really? How is he to interview?
He is very much like Paul Allen. You know, these guys are programmers, they're coders. He's soft, he's sweet, he's kind of nerdy. And you know what? If you've ever ridden herd on an open source community, you know why he's cranky.
Yeah.
People can be real jerks.
Yeah.
And so I don't blame him for being cranky. He's done a wonderful thing for the world. He, instead of, and this was 92, instead of saying, I'm going to make a proprietary operating system, he gave it away. He said, I'll keep the trademark so I can make sure it's pure, but I'm not charging anybody. And it was perfect timing because it was right when the internet and, you know, was taken off and people could actually work on it globally. That's why he wrote Git, because he wanted a better source control system. Mm-hmm. It really deserves a lot of credit. And so in this moment where we're talking about these big, massive acquisitions of GitHub and Red Hat, a tip of the hat to the guy who made it possible. Mm-hmm. I hope he makes a couple of bucks off it anyway.
Yeah, I would hope so, too.
I think he probably did. Yeah. He's doing all right. I hope you are, Malinus. And if I can send you a dollar, I will. be glad to. How are they going to run GitHub? Is it's the new CEO is now in charge as of a couple of days
Matt
ago.
Matt Friedman.
Matt.
You know.
Is it going to be like Skype, like LinkedIn? Is it autonomous? How is that going to work?
Yeah. they're saying LinkedIn. So they keep saying we're going to run GitHub like we've been doing LinkedIn, which means pretty much independently. I mean, LinkedIn runs itself pretty much. There's some synergies with the rest of Microsoft, but it kind of does its own thing. It doesn't even run on Azure. I mean, they don't use a lot of Microsoft products, although that's starting to change a little bit internally. They're going to Office 365 now, but I think the plan is hands off to try to keep people from abandoning ship.
Good. Okay. I like many prickly open source people, closed my GitHub account.
Did you,
Leo? Leo, listen. You can use proprietary software and still be kind of a dick like I am. It's not, you know. You don't have to go open source if you just want to unleash on people. Well, I find that Windows does the job.
I recreated my account. I use Git, the software Git, in my own server. But I think GitHub has a really important role in the open source community.
Yeah,
sure.
And it's still to this day, probably every day, I will go to somebody's GitHub repository for something. Just yesterday, I was downloading the Arial screensaver for you can get it from the Mac, from Apple's Apple TV has a great screensaver.
Yeah,
and on GitHub, there's code to run it as a screensaver on Windows or Macintosh, and it's open source.
It is amazing.
It's really, daily I will go there for something.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Microsoft will be a good steward. If they're not.
There's no worry there at all. They will do right by this. No one should be worried about that.
Yeah, I decided not to. Okay, so they did announce right at the end of our show last week.
Yep. Ill-timed
fiscal year 19 first quarter results.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I asked you last minute as you departed. Yeah. What to look for, and I think you nailed it.
Yep.
Yep. Nice
job. A
lot
of vague.
Another record quarter.
You said watch the commercial cloud, right?
Sure. Show me the money, Mary Jo.
Yeah.
Show me the money.
Good luck showing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a record quarter. Pretty much everything was up. A lot of these things, we don't know the exact number because they give us percentages. Like, we don't know what dollar value Azure has right now, but Azure was up 70-odd% and Office 365 was up. Everything was up.
I got to talk to Jim Cramer or somebody and ask them, why is it that the SEC allows companies not to break out these individual divisions?
That's incredible.
Isn't that important information for investors?
I think, would you call it pertinent?
Pertinent.
For a shareholder to understand where the money's coming from?
Yeah.
How can they legally keep it a secret? It's crazy.
I mean, that's what these results are supposed to be. Informative to shareholders. They go along with
it. It has just gotten more and more vague over time.
It has.
It's crazy.
Every quarter, I feel like it gets vaguer.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we just mentioned the LinkedIn thing. You know, LinkedIn just went under the Iron Curtain.
Some of it did, which is even more confusing. Like, part of LinkedIn is now reported as commercial cloud, but not all of it.
That's right. Oh, see, that's beautiful because, you know, that's the Microsoft way.
Yeah. I mean, like, one of the numbers I thought was really interesting, and I would have loved to have known the real number, like gaming was up 44% in the quarter. Like, why was it up, right? Like,
so that's interesting to me. So I looked at what they said about this, right? And there were it's really interesting to me. The Xbox One X is has been in the market for a year. They actually benefited a year ago from the launch of this product, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this product's doing well. In the United States, at least, it's outselling the S. That's kind of interesting. But you know what the other big driver almost certainly was of this bump was Fortnite. Right?
Oh, really?
Fortnite. What? Fortnite is the little ship that rises all seas. Yeah. Fortnite is its own industry. It's like its own thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think they benefited as just a side effect as we're one of the platforms that can run Fortnite. It's unbelievable.
Apple makes Fortnite makes $1 million a day on iOS. I imagine it's similar on the Xbox.
Yeah. Crazy.
And Windows.
It might even be higher. Well, actually, I'm sure the tournament stuff is mostly PC based, but you know, this is going to evolve into something that's bigger than professional sports.
Oh, absolutely. I never believed esports until I saw a Fortnite esports event.
Yeah.
And then I believed. I'm a believer.
Wow.
You see the numbers of these things and it's
more fun to watch Ninja grease 99 people than it is to watch the 49ers play. I'll tell you that right now.
Sure. Well, you're not watching the right teams, but yes,
that's true. Yeah. That Brady is an amazing fella.
Also, I point this out every quarter, but the part of the company that doesn't have a serious cloud play is the one that makes the most money.
Yeah.
And this is their Apple too, you know.
Interesting.
It's going to change. It's getting closer and closer. But if you look at more personal computing, which is Windows and Xbox and Surface, more revenues than the other parts of the company.
Yeah.
Here's what the SEC says the 10K is.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's the annual report. There's a 10Q.
Yeah, which Microsoft files every
quarter. Yeah. A comprehensive overview of the company's business and financial condition, including audited financial statements. I wonder, though, well, obviously, federal securities law requires publicly traded companies to disclose information on an ongoing basis. Quarterly reports on Form 10-Q, unaudited financial statements, provides a continuing view of the company's financial position during the year. Yeah, you know, it's kind of fuzzy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they give us the numbers for these three divisions, you know, more personal computing and the cloud part of the company and office. We get those numbers. We see the net revenue. We see these numbers. But the reason we are saying it's vague is they lump things together that you wouldn't necessarily put in these groups together. Yeah. And you're like, okay, more personal computing was up X percent. So what was that because of gaming or Surface or Windows?
Surface is a great example, or Xbox. Like, these are product lines where they generate revenues. They're selling hardware, software, services, whatever it might be. Right. Are they profitable? No, almost certainly not.
But we don't know. It clearly doesn't violate the letter of the law, but
it doesn't.
But it must. Yeah. But it certainly violates the spirit of it, I think.
I know. The weird thing is, every once in a while, they give you a number for something. Like, here's one thing they said in their call. They were like, guess what? In the next fiscal year, Dynamics, which is ERP and CRM, is going to hit $2.5 billion in revenues. Why did they call that one thing out when they don't break anything else out in that division?
More because they're cherry picking.
Right.
And all these companies do it. Apple does it too. They either give you a statistic like Apple Watch sales were up 50% year over year, which is meaningless.
Yeah.
Right. Or they'll be the best quarter ever, or they'll say something like that. But clearly they're cherry picking the stat to sound good, which is worse. That seems to me to be misleading.
Oh, it is misleading. And the problem for Microsoft, the reason it's worse with Microsoft in this case is that Microsoft has 1,100 different products. Apple has six. Yeah. You know, Apple has three primary products that they actually break down unit sales, and you know, you can see how profitable things are. But they also have this like other kind of category that they lump in Apple TV and watch and you know, whatever. And you never know. And that's their version of more personal computing. You know, you don't know where this money is coming from.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, we sort of do know because most of it's probably coming from Windows, you know, and Windows licensing, and
which is the opposite of cloud.
It's that's my point. It's kind of the dirty secret. It's like, but it looks like this thing's going gangbusters over here. No, look over here. Look.
Pay no attention.
Don't worry about that. That's dying. No, that's dead. Those guys don't even talk to the CEO. Listen, we've been cloud stuff. It's over here. You know, it's very strange.
It is.
It's hard. It's hard to deal with every quarter. It's like, oh man, these guys, you know. But
yeah.
That's
what
they do.
And to show you the difference between Apple and Microsoft, Apple yesterday released an update for the Apple Watch, which bricked Apple Watches. So they pulled it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing a lot of coverage of that.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen stories about
it. It's not like there's a billion and a half Apple Watches out there.
But they're not calling it Watchgate.
Watchgate.
They're not calling it the April 2018 update gate.
Yeah.
They could have.
Or whatever.
They could have called it that.
It bricked the watches. It bricked them, and they had to pull the entire update, and they have no answer to people whose watches were bricked. They haven't figured out what to do about it yet.
Yikes. Sure.
At least last time I checked.
You're going to be visiting an Apple store. That's what you're
going to
be doing.
Yeah, you're going to the Apple store. Mm. Maybe you're getting a new watch. I don't know.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be amazing.
I was lucky I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But that just shows you the disparity in coverage.
Yeah.
We Leo, know. They just released new MacBook Airs.
All right. Oh, but there's
everyone's so excited.
Yeah.
Leo, gold. It's in gold. It's what we always wanted.
Yeah, it's gold. I did get the gold. I'm sorry. I'm embarrassed to say.
Yeah, at least it's not rose gold.
That's why it costs so much.
I'm sure. Is it literally made of gold? That would almost justify the cost.
Almost. No, it's made of old Pepsi cans.
It's like an anodized gold leaf coating. It's guaranteed not to scratch off. Unless you need a couple of bucks for your Starbucks, you can scrape it into the tray. They're a little chisel.
This you're not going to believe.
What?
Azure is 10 years old.
I know.
That's hard to believe.
And can you guys believe that?
We didn't know how to say it at first.
I can believe it. Yeah, Azure.
Azure.
Yep.
I remember Paul and me going Azure. Back and forth. How do you say that?
Azure.
Mm-hmm. Azure. Sounds like you're...
Windows Azure was my first major defeat at Microsoft. I always tell the story.
Trying to understand it.
Didn't understand what it was.
What is
that? I sat there in that announcement. I was like, what the hell are they talking about? And so
we all were doing that.
Yeah, I walked out and they said, hey, we're going to have a thing for the press. We're going to talk about it for 45 minutes or an hour. If you need,
if you have
any questions. I said, I have nothing but questions. So I sat through the whole thing, over me, whatever. I walked out and the woman from Wagad said, do you get it now? And I said, nope. I don't understand this product.
It was really interesting. It was at a PDC. They actually finally announced this. They had been building it for years before that, kind of quietly.
Right?
Yeah, Red Dog was the code name for Azure.
Red Dog. Wow, I didn't know
Red Dog was the code name. It was named after a seedy strip club in Silicon Valley.
What?
Yep.
No.
Dave Cutler story. Yep.
Not after Scott Goo's red shirt.
No.
Wow.
It's kind of
and
a
if
red
you remember,
dog.
When they announced Azure, a lot of the presenters had red shoes. Do you remember that? And we didn't know why, because I don't think we knew at the time it was Red Dog. And then we kind of figured it out afterwards. We're like, there's going to be some
I didn't see that. I don't remember the red shoes. I think I was busy staring at the ceiling and wondering what had gone wrong with my career. But
Well, it was cool. The coolest thing for me about Red Dog and Azure was they actually let me talk to the team that built it. Like, they let me go and meet with the people. And the only one I didn't get to meet with was Cutler, but he actually answered questions of mine over email about Red Dog. And it was so cool to hear how they built it and what they were thinking. They basically took the experts of Windows Server at the company and they said, we want to do this cloud thing. We don't really know what it should look like. You guys go figure that out. That's how they did it.
I have Windows Weekly 81 from that exact time period.
You should queue it up to the part where I'm like, I had no idea what this was.
Was I on the show then? No.
No, you're just on the album right now.
I just don't know. This is a capability that they have.
I got to find
it. Yeah, yes. And
they all work together? Yeah.
They all work together. And I was really careful to watch people.
I want to find you.
Surprise. And he didn't push that as hard at the keynote as I thought.
I'll have to find it and stick it in later because I don't want to.
Everything on the Office Network.
Sit here.
OLAP cubes at your LDAP.
This is one of them, but. I still feel very strongly that have I mentioned how much I hate Windows Mobile, Leo?
Yeah, Paul, you have not changed. You have not changed.
Some things never change.
I wish I had planned this better because I would love to find that point in the show where you mention.
I'm positive I tell that story. I don't remember telling it, but I mean,
that was
the event to me. It was just a giant defeat. Quantum computing was the next one.
No, like you said, after they announced it, they let us each have these one-on-ones where we could go and talk to people. So I got Amitabh Srivastava, who was one of the main guys on Azure. And so I walk into the meeting room and I go to him, can you just explain to me what you announced? Because I have absolutely no idea.
And you're the enterprise beat.
And he was so excited. He started drawing on a whiteboard. And he was like, this is awesome. And
then remember, at that point, I was writing about enterprise computing from 1999 through the time I left, 2015. I mean, I was also writing about enterprise computing. Yeah. I had idea what this guy was talking about.
No, because we didn't really have a frame of reference. Like, I kept going, like, is it like Windows Server? And he's like, it's kind of like it, except there's this fabric controller thing. And I was like, I don't know what that is.
Talking,
but it sounds cool.
That was tough.
I can't believe it was 10 years ago, though, because it seems like we've had it in some ways so much longer and in some ways not that long.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not surprised it was a long time ago. And so 10 years ago, you know, like .NET was what, 2001 seems too long ago.
.NET.
Yeah, I think it was. Might have been .NET was 2001, you know. Mm. Was mildly confused by .NET, I will say.
Yeah, same.
But Windows Azure, as we called it at the time, that one snowed me under.
Live Mesh. I remember just like having a mental breakdown over
Live Mesh. I loved Live Mesh.
I was just like, I don't know what this is either.
Well, a Live Mesh. Okay, so there was the Live Mesh that actually shipped, which was just Data Sync. But there was a Live Mesh platform. I think that's what you're referring to. There were going to be Live Mesh apps.
Yep.
And it was like, what are you talking about? Yep.
Ah, the good old days. They had big plans. Now quantum computing is our new Waterloo.
Yeah. My new Beowulf. White whale.
Yep.
I think I might have found...
You're trying to find the part of the show, aren't you?
I might have found the segment here.
Though, with Windows 7, because Windows 7 runs on these netbooks.
Very smart.
Terrible. They talked about this Windows Azure thing.
Right.
And Windows Azure, of course, is a cloud computing platform.
Of course.
And it was so confusing and so boring. And it was just terrible because, you know, we came off of this Sunday thing. Everyone was really excited and couldn't wait for the whole world to see this stuff. And then Sunday kind of came and went. They never even mentioned it, you know. And it was just typical.
Azure the same as Live Mesh, or is this something new?
No. And you know something? I would love to be able to sit here and tell you exactly how these things work, but I'll give you my understanding of it. The sad thing is I sat through the
keynote
address, and we live blogged it, a bunch of us. And then I had a meeting with them for 45 minutes afterwards and asked, I mean, maybe 117 questions because I really, and in fact, I asked so many questions, I felt like the annoying guy. You know, I don't,
you were that guy.
I usually just sit there and take notes, but this time I'm really having a hard time understanding how all these pieces fit together. Right. I've seen an enormous number of very cool things, but the big picture part of it, I'm still a little fuzzy on. But my understanding of it is this: they're basically creating a version of Windows Server that runs in the cloud, and by in the cloud, I mean only on Microsoft's data centers. And it will go across the globe eventually. In the beginning, of course, it'll start in the United States, but eventually, this thing will be all around the world.
That was October 31st, 2008, exactly.
Yep.
So I remember spending many of my birthdays in different cities because Microsoft would always have PDC around that time. And of course, more recently, Mary Jo and I went to different shows as well where I happened to be away during my birthday. But
that's right. Your birthday was Monday, wasn't it? Happy birthday.
I'm sorry. What did I mean? I'm sorry. I appreciate that my memory of this is accurate.
It is exactly.
I walked out of this thing and I was like, you know, she said, "Do you have any questions? If you have any questions, you should go into this meeting." And I said, "I have nothing but questions." And apparently, I was I don't remember asking questions,
the annoying guy. No, well, but you know what? You got the story.
Hold on a second. Everyone else is nodding their head like they completely get it. I hate that.
Which they did.
It was like when we were talking to Seth Warris about quantum computing. He's so excited, he's so animated. He completely understood it, and I'm like, I am clearly an idiot. I have no idea what they're talking about.
None of us knew.
Happy it was
birthday.
Tough. It was
Paul
a tough
Thurrott
day.
And Windows Azure, and they're both 10 years old today.
I appreciate how honest I was about it, and that I kind of framed it like, hey, "I'm going to tell you what I think it is."
There in a nutshell. Yeah, you've always been
a good way to do it. Yeah, that's good.
And you know what? You explained it exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love it that your article, Mary Jo, about Windows Azure's 10th anniversary has a big ad for purple.
Hey, nice.
Right.
I don't know what that means, but it's not exactly.
I know.
Azure,
Red Dog, purple. I don't know.
If you mix Red Dog and Azure, you get
you get purple.
Purple.
That's funny.
Mac Office Dark Mode. I don't know if I can get that excited.
Let's skip
that.
Let's skip this stuff.
Yeah. We got some back of the book action here.
All right. Let's take a break and then. Yeah, because Mary Jo is very excited about her code word.
I am.
Very excited.
I wanted to use that as the top story, but I saw where she put that and I said, you know.
We buried the lead, folks.
All right.
Stay tuned.
It's good.
Coming up next, but first a word from our sponsor, WordPress.com. The best, I will say it, content management system out there, and you can use it. You know, I remember when The Verge had their own special custom-built million-dollar content management system, and I think Neil I said, people actually come to work for us just because they want to use our CMS. I don't think so. But you don't have to go to work for The Verge to use the best, WordPress.com. What is a content management system? It's your website. It's your home on the internet. It's where you go to represent your business or yourself. If you don't have a website, you gotta create one. And in fact, I would go to WordPress.com, get a domain name, your name ideally, or something that reflects you or your business. Set up a website. You don't need to be a webmaster. You don't need even to be a novice. You don't need to know anything about it. They've got great templates. All the engineering's done for you. All the serving, the hosting, the security, the software updates. They do all the heavy lifting. Your only job is to put the content in. That's why it's a content management system. You post your thoughts, your insights, your special deals this week. They have e-commerce, you bet. You can have an entire store if you want. I love WordPress.com. I got my badge on my WordPress app. Oh, by the way, I'll tell you about the WordPress. I love the WordPress app, but I got my badge the other day for my 12th anniversary, even before Windows Azure was born. I was using WordPress 12 years now, and I love it. If you go to leolaporte.com, that's my WordPress site. And I think one of the things I really realized is that because they do the heavy lifting, I can focus more on the content. And, I even know how to run it. I've had a self-installed WordPress for years. I know how to run it, but I don't want to run it because that just takes you away from the thing that you created the site for in the first place. Your vision, your feel, your look, your personality, your business. It's the ultimate online hub and it's yours. It's not Mark Zuckerberg's. It's not Jack's. You can upload images and video and audio and more, and they're not hosted on YouTube. They're hosted at WordPress.com. You can export and import content anytime you want from your site. This is yours. This is your site, your home, your content. 24/7 support. Get help whenever you need it. And plans start at just $4 a month, so it's not expensive. There's a good reason 32% of all websites run on WordPress. 32% is like a third. It'll be a third next month. It's been going up steady. Right now, you can get 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/windows to create your website. A great gift for a high schooler, a teen. Get them their name.com and get them a WordPress.com site because that's where, my kids, this is what I do. You got to do this so that when people search your name, it's not some post of you getting drunk that your jerky friend put on Facebook. It's your site with your best stuff. Put your best foot forward. That's same for a business, by the way. WordPress.com/windows. Create your site. And by the way, when you go to WordPress.com/windows, you get 15% off that brand new site. WordPress.com/windows. Your site, your vision, no limits. WordPress.com/windows. Back of the book time, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Let's kick it off with the Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
I've got three tips, and they're all Xbox related. Actually, I have a fourth tip. Starting tomorrow, if you have a Spotify family account or premium account, you can get a free Google Home Mini for some reason.
What?
So check that out. I know it's it starts tomorrow. I don't know why, but you might as well get it if you're already paying for it. So why not? Anyway, but the rest of these are Xbox related. So tomorrow is November 1st, which means we're switching over to a new month of games with gold. Actually, the first games are available today. And they're awesome. So be sure to get both of these. Battlefield 1, which is an incredible World War I shooter from EA. And I think it's only a year old, too, is free on Xbox One.
And then the original Assassin's Creed, which I actually finished. It's the only Assassin's Creed game I ever finished, is available on Xbox One and also on Xbox One and backward compatibility and
is
on Xbox.
Is it the Xbox 360 version or is it?
Yeah, because it's the first one. The Xbox 360 was the only version that was out at the time.
Awesome.
Great game. The other two games I don't personally care about, but they're not available yet anyway. But those two are blockbusters.
I'm gonna get Battlefield 1. That is a great game.
Excellent. The other two are Microsoft, a couple years ago, started a new indie game program called ID at Xbox. They've now suppressed 1,000 indie games on the platform. Some of these games are Xbox One. Some of them are Windows 10. Some are both. The most notable, of course, is Cuphead, which is big enough that it's almost like a mainstream, you know, AAA title. But there are a bunch of other awesome games in ID at Xbox. You know, The Inside is a great example. Is another game I finished, which is absolutely fantastic. But there's
Stardew Valley, too. That was an indie game.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Success. Yeah.
Yep. Lots of really cool games in there. So be sure to check those out. And then if you are a Red Dead Redemption 2 fan, it seems like a lot of you are because it just made $750 million
or
whatever.
Holy cow, what?
Yeah, so Call of Duty, the new Call of Duty game made something like $500 or $550 million in its first weekend of availability.
Red Dead Redemption
made 700 and something million. I don't know the exact number, but Red Dead Redemption 2. If you do buy this game I'm not sure the exact date in the U.S. and Canada, you can get $100 off any Xbox One. So Xbox One S, Xbox One X, either one. So if you're not on the platform yet, this might be a good time to go in that direction. And then the app pick of the week is actually an app I've never tried. I plan never to try, but I could see the use of this. And it's a new version of Skype for Web. So Skype for Web is actually something that's been around for a while. But this is basically Skype version 8, so the new version of Skype, you know, the modern Skype client that's just started shipping across mobile and then on Windows over this past year, is now available on the web as well. And so this is, you know, obviously you can picture the circumstances why you might need to use this. You're using a public computer or someone else's computer and you got to get engaged in a work call or whatever it might be. Now you don't have to worry about installing Skype or using someone else's Skype. You can just sign in on the web and do it that way.
Can I ask you a question on that one?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't Skype on the web before?
Yes. This is the new Skype. So in other words, this is the, yes. So 3 years ago, there was a Skype for web.
Right. Okay.
This is the V8 client essentially coming.
Gotcha. Because I saw that and I'm like, wait, wasn't Skype on the web already?
I had to look it up. I was like, I'm positive Skype's been on the web. Okay. I mean, you could get Skype through Outlook.com and, you know, in various other places.
Yes, the
Skype web client has been around for a while. This is the new version.
So they've refreshed the Skype web client with the new bits.
Yep, to match the V8. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Got it. Nice.
That means it's time for Mary Jo Poley and her enterprise pick of the week.
Yes, my enterprise pick of the week is Olympia. Olympia is a name that Microsoft used for the Windows Insider Lab for Enterprise that they came out with originally in September 2017. So if you're a Windows Insider and you care about enterprise features that are coming down the pike and you want to test them, but in kind of a sane and careful way, Microsoft has this fake company they set up called Olympia Corp, and it lets you test these features using that company. So in version one, they set up Olympia and they said you can enroll your real devices in this test company and test against them. Olympia V2, which is out now, allows users to set up a Microsoft 365 deployment testing environment and test it on your own machine. So it's a little bit different. It's like you can set this up in a one-click way and kind of run this yourself instead of enrolling into Microsoft's company, is my understanding. It's open now. Olympia V2 is open now to anyone who's a Windows Insider who wants to test Windows Enterprise features, Intune, Office 365, and more. So if you're somebody who is in a business setting, want to see what's coming down the pike, want to try it out in a test setting where Microsoft gives you a lab guide and they set this up for you in VMs that you can run on your own machine, check out Olympia V2. The way to get it, aka.ms/Olympia V2. Got to be an insider to do it.
All right. We've been waiting. Code name of the week.
Okay. just when you thought you kind of understood where Microsoft was going with Windows 10 codenames, we're going to pull the rug right out from under you.
Uh-oh. Also, this
We had Redstone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then suddenly they switched to...
By the way, don't forget Threshold.
Threshold 1, Threshold 2, Redstone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those were all code names. Then we suddenly had 19H1. So you're like, oh, now we're going to do 19H2, 20H1. Nope. We're going to do something totally different. We're going to use element code names. So instead of 19H2, you're going to have Windows 10 Vanadium. Yeah, rolls right off the tongue. Vanadium. And then the following version, the Windows 10 feature update, will be called Vibranium. If you were going by the periodic table of elements, you should have been Vanadium and then Chromium. But can you imagine if Microsoft did Windows 10?
Oh, that would be the best.
Yeah, can't do that.
Which, by the way, is everything you need to know about the first name they picked. Just pick one where the next one's not Chromium, idiots.
So where are these names coming from? This is super interesting. They didn't just pick these out of the blue. This is the way Azure codenames things. So Azure Titanium is what, on the Windows side, is the equivalent of 19H1. But they're not going to use that on Windows because they've already started using 19H1. So starting with Vanadium, which is the successor to Titanium in the periodic chart, you will have Vanadium, all the Azure things codenamed Vanadium, and then you'll have Windows 10 Vanadium. You couldn't have Chromium, so you're going to have Azure Vibranium, and then Windows 10 Vibranium. Then you'll go back to the real element
Dumb and
names.
Dumber already taken? Or
Now, after that will be Manganese, I believe. Is that the next element? So now we're using... Just get out your periodic table of elements, everyone, and check it out.
Hold on, I got mine right here.
Get yours out. Get it out.
But no Chromium.
No Chromium. No.
You know, it's probably best we didn't do this at the top of the book, at the top of the show, because I probably just... I would have been dying.
You would have lost it. Yeah.
I think you lost it perfectly.
Right. So
well
Microsoft, by the way, didn't tell me this. This is sources close to Microsoft. But then our buddy Taro Alhonen did, I don't know how he saw this. I guess he did a get VM host, and all of a sudden all the code names started showing up. There's Vanadium, there's Vibranium, there's Manganese. All the next code names are right there, hidden in plain sight. So yeah, this is real, guys. These are your new code names. These are your new Windows 10 code names.
Can we just go back to cities?
Cities were kind of easier, weren't they?
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium.
Of course, when this thing was made, the periodic table of the elements was about half the size it is today.
Great Tom Lehrer.
There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium.
Which, by the way, still alive in Santa Cruz. And silicon and silver and retired and Professor Emeritus.
I think this guy could have handled what Windows Azure was. He would have been able to explain it.
There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium
I can't
and fluorine
believe
and terbium and manganese and
mercury
and molybdenum and magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium.
There's titanium.
And cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium.
Chromium.
There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, kryptonium, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium.
Not in order, I have to point out.
These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
Yikes. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Okay, and if you're wondering, where did the vibranium come from? Because
that
is not
on
the table.
That comes from Wakanda.
Correct. And I did not notice that. I saw Black Panther, and I forgot that. Rich Woods reminded me today. He's like, Mary Jo, Captain America, his shield.
Yeah, when you know too much about this stuff, it's time to reevaluate your life's direction.
Yeah. So vibranium is the material, the fake material that, well, I shouldn't say fake, the material that Captain America's shield is made out of.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well,
adamantium and unobtainium must be in the...
Is adamantium the stuff that Adamant's song list was made out of?
Yes, that's right. Adamantium.
Unobtainium must be Windows 10 1809, as Ed Bott
tweeted. I like it. Burn. Yes.
Burn.
I think we've all earned a beer pick of the week, Mary Jo.
Yes. And Paul, I'm going to do a pumpkin beer because it's Halloween.
You know what? I almost warned you about this explicitly, and I thought,
you did.
Mary Jo has refined tastes. She's not going to do this to me.
She couldn't.
You know what?
And here we are. I'm interested that you...
There's a couple good pumpkin beers on the market, or at least passable.
I don't think there are.
Okay, so when and if you ever start drinking beer again, Dogfish Head Pumpkin Ale is something worth a try. It's their pumpkin beer.
I bet I've had it.
You may have. So I find many pumpkin beers taste like a slice of pumpkin pie, which is fine if that's what you want, but it doesn't taste like beer. If you want
they often taste like spices, don't they?
Yes, this has a lot of spices, nutmeg, cinnamon, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But you can still taste the pumpkin. It's I would say, a decent pumpkin beer. It is brewed with brown sugar, but it's not so sweet that you just are like, pumpkin pie. It's good. I just had some yesterday, and I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't drink it every day. In fact, I probably would only drink it once a year. But if you are going to drink one pumpkin beer once a year, try Dogfish Head Pumpkin Ale.
So I checked this beer in.
You did. Okay.
At Rattle and Hum.
Mm-hmm.
See?
In November 2015.
And that was it.
And what did you give it? A one?
3 stars.
Oh, that's not bad.
3. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I did not. I don't think I wrote a review. Yeah, I just give it 3 stars.
Okay.
Is there a sweet potato beer?
Oh, dear God.
I bet there is. I've had a squash beer. Squash beer can be good. Don't mind a vegetal beer.
We're going to combine a tuber with yeast. We're going to make an unholy brew.
What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? I'm doing an untraditional Thanksgiving with ham and lasagna, and I thought, I got to have a sweet potato pie.
Leo, you need an intervention. I don't know what's going on over here.
You don't have to eat both the ham and the lasagna.
You don't have to eat either. It's Thanksgiving.
I'm not doing turkey. I'm not doing it.
This is what happens when you go open source, people. See what's happening here? This is what I've been warning about.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded this fine edition of Windows Weekly, the super edition. We do that every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. Actually, next week it'll be 1900. Let's get that straight. We're setting the clocks back Sunday, which means UTC doesn't change, but we do.
Since we're going to have some sunlight in the morning for a couple of weeks.
Yep. I know. That'll be nice.
We'll slip back a little bit. Yeah, I got up to do the Apple event yesterday. It was dark.
Yeah.
No, it's every day I get up, it's pitch black right now. I can't stand it.
I've carefully arranged my life so I don't have to get up before the sun comes up, ever. Thank you, Apple. Sure. So,
well, they had it on the East Coast. I mean, here it was a reasonable time.
Here it was a normal time.
Yeah.
Oh, you're there, it was a normal time. Here it was not a normal time, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Our if you want to watch live, you can, twit.tv/live, or you can go to live.twit.tv, your choice. A couple of people have noted that YouTube Live is currently down. Yeah, we got dinged yesterday. Apple gave us a copyright strike because...
What did you do?
We do what we always do, which was stream the Apple event and comment on it, which is fair use. We've appealed, and we'll see what happens. But for now, the YouTube live stream's down. But don't worry, we handle all that. If you just go to twit.tv/live, there are other sources, and we'll pick the best one just right for you. If you're in the live portion of the show, audio or video, do also chat with us, because that's a bunch of other people, at least half a dozen, also watching live. IRC.twit.tv. Downloadable versions, including Windows 81, the Azure episode.
That was audio only, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We used to have to crank up the radio and listen to the boys talk about it.
Before Mary Jo came to.
Those were what we refer to now as the Sausage Fest years.
It was right before we went to video. I think it was around that time we went to video.
Yeah.
But that was back in the cottage, I think. I can't believe.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, the first time I ever came out, you were in the cottage.
Yeah. You've come out? Well, that's good. I didn't know that. Twit. Twit.tv.
28 years of marriage.
/Windows. Actually, it's twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. All the episodes are there, all 593. And you can also subscribe. And in fact, that's the best way to get it, in your favorite podcast app. That way you don't have to do anything. You set it up once and you'll get Windows Weekly the minute it's available each and every week, so you can listen at your leisure. Thank you, Paul. PaulTherott.com. Actually, just Therott.com. What happens if I go to PaulTherott.com?
I don't think anything, although I do own that domain. I was listening to your bit on the WordPress thing, and I was just thinking about that.
That should be your personal blog.
That used to be my Office 365 commercial account.
Oh.
But I don't believe it points to anything now. God, I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, we're having trouble finding that site.
Yeah. So maybe I should do something with that.
Just use his last name. It's a little shorter. Thurrott.com. Leanpub.com for the books, especially the Field Guide to Windows 10. Excellent. Excellent. And if you buy that now, do you get the update to 1809 if that should ever come out, right?
That's right. Yeah. Which is still in progress, but yes.
Yeah.
Just like 1809.
Yes. Interestingly, you really, Paul ain't done till Windows is done.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And vice versa.
And Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. She's been wise enough not to write any books lately. We thank you.
I'll get her yet.
No, you will not.
Happy Halloween, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. And your little dog.